ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning, Reed, Victor, Christina, and Jeremy. Welcome to Flight Day 9.
We're getting close to the end of the mission now. This time tomorrow, the Orion capsule will have splashed down.
And the four astronauts will be back home on planet Earth.
I've got a few items for you related to entry tomorrow.
All right, well, get after it. Lots to do today.
I'm science reporter Jacinta Bowler.
And I'm Belinda Smith. This is Artemis Explained, a daily podcast about the Artemis 2 mission to and from the moon.
For science fiction on ABC Radio National.
Now, Jacinta, before we get to mission in under a minute, you're sounding a bit different today. You sound a bit like NASA's S-band radio comms from way back.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah, I'm not feeling great today, so I'm keeping my germs to myself. I'm coming to you just like the astronauts, under a blanket, in my room. Glamorous.
I hope you have a working toilet. Okay, let's do mission in under a minute with you. Unwell, but still very passionate about this.
Yes, we've got to get to the end. They're so close. Today was a real cruisy day for the astronauts. They woke up to a country song called Lonesome Drifter by Charlie Crockett. They did some press conferences and continued to pack up the cabin. Interestingly, they've only just reached the halfway point back from the moon at about 10 a.m. this morning. So they're really going to rocket that final bit before they do the splashdown tomorrow. And I imagine that they soaked in their last day in space before the big day. But I wanted to add that it's not just on them anymore. We've talked a lot about the astronauts, but there's a whole team that's done a lot to be able to get them up there and specifically to bring them down. The astronauts, they're just going to be strapped in. They're not doing much on the day. It'll be on the engineers and the rescue team to make sure that they get home safely.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people watching, holding their breath for that entire time that they're re-entering Earth's atmosphere and safely splashing down. So when will splashdown actually happen?
It's not far away. There's about a 13-minute window from when they enter the atmosphere to when they land, and this is going to happen at about 9:45 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time.
So that 13-minute window starts at about 9:45 in the morning.
Yes.
Australian Eastern Standard Time. Okay. And so the actual splashdown will be roughly 10 a.m. or a little bit later.
Yeah. Depending on how everything goes, it'll be just after 10 a.m.
Okay. And where will they end up?
They are hoping to end up off the coast of San Diego. They've got about 1,000 kilometres that they can look at within that range. But there's lots of different factors that may affect that particular position. So, you know, the weather, the wind, how fast they enter the atmosphere. They're trying to make the landing as smooth as possible. And hopefully everything will go perfectly right and it won't be an issue. But yeah, there's a pretty big area off that coast that they could land in.
I did see in the NASA news briefing this morning that they intentionally were fairly vague about where they'll end up. I think to stop people from actually going out there to be there when they land, just try to keep most people away and just the rescue boat and the people that absolutely need to be in that area.
Yeah, well, they're not supposed to. You really shouldn't. If you are listening from somewhere close to there, definitely don't head out to that space. There is quite a big exclusion zone, so you're not allowed into it. And the reason for that is because there's debris that can come off the spacecraft and potentially hit your boat, and that would be a really bad time.
Terrible time. Okay, so if we want to watch safely, how can we do it?
Yes. So if you don't have a boat, I'd recommend...
and a death wish.
Yeah, exactly. A boat and a death wish. NASA has been live streaming the whole mission. So we've been watching it every day, but they'll definitely be live streaming this bit and you can just watch it on YouTube.
And we have the camera off just to prevent overheating and battery drain. Confirm you got a good image coming down.
We do have an image coming down.
You know, Jackie, Snark does carry across the cosmos.
All right. So as the astronauts are approaching Earth's atmosphere, like you said, they've just crossed halfway between the moon and Earth. Those last few hours, what are they doing? I mean, we've already talked a little bit about how they've been sort of basically cleaning up the cabin and putting stuff away. What else have they been doing?
Yeah, so they've been having lots of conference calls with the different sections of the mission to confirm, you know, those final things with the people on the ground before they get in there. And the other thing that they will have to do tomorrow before they end up in the atmosphere is to put back on those orange suits. So they're going to be wearing the orange suits tomorrow. They're going to be, you know, sitting strapped in all good so that they can make sure that they're safe in case something goes wrong on the day.
So those orange suits, they're the same ones that they're wearing at launch, right?
Exactly the same ones, yeah.
But unlike at launch, they're going to be wearing an extra layer underneath, and this is the orthostatic layer of garments. So what this layer is supposed to do is to help the astronauts maintain their blood pressure and circulation when they land on Earth, because otherwise they might get dizzy and lightheaded. Their blood is, again, subject to the force of gravity. So instead of sort of floating around their body evenly, it gets dragged back down to their feet. And so this helps keep the blood where it should be. And it works by applying a bit of compression to the lower body, which keeps the blood a bit more, I guess, in their torso and head. So it's less of a shock when they arrive back on Earth.
You definitely want to make sure that your blood stays in your head, doesn't go to your feet all the time. That's, yeah, not ideal.
Highly necessary. All right, so they're suited up. They've got the orthostatic garments on underneath their bright orange suits. What will happen during re-entry?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different stages. About 42 minutes before the splashdown, the crew module, so that's where the astronauts are, that'll separate from the service module. So that's the bit that kind of has been rocketing them along throughout most of this mission. And they'll do a raise burn and some rolls to avoid hitting any of the resulting debris that comes off that. And then once they've done that, it's just that crew module. That's the little top dome there. Earth's atmosphere is about 122 kilometers up. And so they'll hit that about 13 minutes before splashdown. And then it's go time. So the surface of the capsule heats up, like we spoke about yesterday, and there's so much heat surrounding the capsule that it will actually turn the air to plasma, and the comms will cut off about 8 minutes before splashdown.
Right. How long will comms be off for?
The whole time, until they land.
Really? Okay. So there's two communications blackouts, really, during the mission, one around the far side of the moon and then one re-entering.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, I didn't think about it like that. But yes, yeah, so they actually...
Potentially the times that you really want to talk to the astronauts, but yeah. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, the team is set up for this. We know that they have GPS and things on board, but you can't use that. So the helicopters themselves actually have a way of tracking the spacecraft as it enters so that, you know, the recovery team can quicker actually get to the spot and pick them up.
Now, you mentioned yesterday that they'll slow down using 11 parachutes. When do they get deployed?
The top of the capsule comes off and then three sets of parachutes deploy. So the first one is at 6.5 kilometres, the second is at 2 kilometres, and the third is 1.5 kilometres above sea level. And each time that happens, they kind of do these really rapid slowdowns in the same way as you would just with a regular parachute if you jump out of an airplane.
Mm. And what will the astronauts feel during this time?
Well, they'll feel and hear the whole thing. So each parachute launching will be another clunk and it'll rapidly slow their descent. Like we talked about yesterday, there's a lot of G-forces involved in this. You just really do get rattled around a bit.
Your recovery ship is on station in the Pacific and there is no change to the weather forecast from yesterday.
Now, something else you mentioned yesterday as well was how hot the spacecraft will get. So it was about 2,600 degrees Celsius as it blasts through the atmosphere. Tell me about the heat shield. How does that work? And how do you keep the astronauts inside cool?
Yeah, so on the bottom of the spacecraft, kind of you've got this like dome-shaped thing and then the bottom section's kind of a more flat area. And that flat area is covered with this thing called a heat shield. The heat shield is very specifically made to be able to absorb a lot of the heat. So it starts to burn up and absorb that heat so that it doesn't actually go through into the astronauts above. And that's very important. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't be able to get back into Earth's atmosphere safely. Now, the heat shield has been a bit of an issue. There has been some talk about it before the mission. Artemis 1, which was an uncrewed mission, went up, but once it landed, and the astronauts would have been safe if they were in this particular capsule, it wouldn't have been a problem. But they did find that there was quite significant degradation of the actual heat shield once they got back to land. And so what the team have done here in this particular mission is they've changed the way that they're going to be entering the atmosphere. So instead of what they did last time, which was called a skip maneuver, where they kind of like, well, skipped off the atmosphere like a stone and then went down after that. They're going to be doing much less of a skip in this case, so that it means they'll be going in faster, but they won't be spending as long in that really hot, hot period of the atmosphere. So they're hoping that that means that they'll be more protected and they won't have as much damage of the heat shield this time.
Right. Okay. So instead of taking a longer route through the atmosphere, which is what Artemis 1 did, Artemis 2 will take a slightly more direct way down to Earth.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it'll just be a bit faster. The engineers did a lot of work on this to try and make sure that, yes, this was going to be the safest route forward. But in future Artemis missions, they're actually looking at changing the heat shield so that when they do it next time, it'll be even safer.
Okay, so everything goes well, parachutes have all popped off, the heat shield's done its thing, astronauts splash down somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. They've made it.
They've made it.
That's not the end, is it?
They're not quite done. The first breath of fresh air is probably going to feel really good.
Could you imagine?
After 10 days of staleness.
Staleness, not being able to change your clothes, a toilet that doesn't seem to be working, all of these smells and things, it's going to be, oh.
The first flushing toilet, I think, is going to be a really nice time. The first shower? Oh, delightful.
Shower. Yeah.
Okay, so, but they don't get it straight away. So once they land, they actually do stay in the capsule for quite a while. It needs to cool down and they use ammonia in the cooling system. So that needs to disperse. So sometimes they're in there for up to an hour, but hopefully it shouldn't be that long on the day. So the recovery team will open up the hatch. They'll collect the astronauts who are probably a little unstable on their feet after so long not using them. And then they pop them onto what's called the front porch. So that's an inflatable boat that they use to take them back to the main ship. Then they get helicoptered off back to the mainland. And I am sure once they get back on solid ground, that feels pretty incredible.
It would. And the astronauts got a nice surprise today. So it turns out someone had hidden some goodies in the Orion capsule before it launched.
We are wondering if you all happened to find any small items of joy. I'm told these may be items you would consume or wear.
Yeah, we were really pleasantly surprised to find some pretty cool socks. However, we haven't found the thing we can consume yet.
We think that is in Alpha 2, unless Reed has drank all of them.
All right, well, you piqued our interest. We'll get after it.
Quick note to let you know, we found our little present. We are very excited, and we are having happy coffee shop time up here right now.
Now, we've had some excellent listener questions, as usual, including this one from 7-year-old Raphael.
My dad told me that space involved quite a lot of maths. Like when they were planning what speed to go, my dad told me that there was a lot of maths. So why did they need that maths? Why couldn't they just have gone, yep, we know what speed to go?
So to answer his question, maths help us predict things. So, for example, figuring out how to get Artemis into space, there are lots of numbers involved. But with those numbers, we can reasonably predict how things will go. The weight of the spacecraft, for instance, how fast it needs to be going to get to the moon, the distance it will arrive, the gravitational forces at play. All of these numbers means that there's just lots of maths being done.
And of course, every mission is different, right? So Artemis 2 is using the Orion capsule. It was different to the capsule that the Apollo astronauts used. It's a different shape, different mass. The moon and the Earth are in different positions. So you have to redo the maths each time. It's not like you can just pick up the speed from this one and just pop it onto that mission because it may not work well.
Even Artemis 1 and Artemis 2, they've got people inside of it. They've got stuff inside of it. It's going to need a different amount of fuel to be able to get it up there and get it around. There is always maths involved in these things.
Yes. Very, very important. So stick with mathematics is what I'm saying. Now, we've also had quite a few questions about gravity. Now, Benjamin asks, when the Artemis mission enters the moon's gravity, how does it break the moon's gravity and re-enter Earth's gravity without rockets or steering?
Yeah, so Earth's gravity is always there, even when they're within the moon's gravity. So Earth's gravity just continues to get less and less strong as the further out you go. But even much past the moon, there's still Earth's gravity in play. What we were talking about the other day with the lunar sphere of influence is the point where the gravity from the moon, the amount of gravity, takes over from the amount of gravity from Earth. So they're all still there, but it's just that one is more strong than the other. The Earth's gravity is always there and it would still pull it around even if the moon wasn't there. If the moon wasn't there, the Earth's gravity would still pull the spacecraft back to Earth. It would just take longer.
Right. Earth's sphere of influence is just really, really, really big and it includes the moon. So you could even go further beyond the moon and still be subject to Earth's gravity.
Absolutely. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
All right, now we've got another question about gravity from Gordy, who's aged 7, and he wants to know, if there is no gravity in space, how do they get back to where gravity will pull them down to Earth?
Well, like I said, Integrity never actually left Earth's gravitational pull. And we've tried to be careful with wording. I don't know if we've always got it right here, but in space, astronauts are weightless or they're in a low gravity environment. It's a lot less gravity than Earth, but there is still gravity in space.
Let's steer away from gravity for a moment and talk about steering. So this question comes from Joy, who asks, how does the spacecraft maneuver in space when there is no air or atmosphere or particles for rockets to push against?
Yeah, this is a really good question. It's kind of unintuitive because you would think, you know, if you're in water, for example, the reason that you move forward is because of all of those particles that you're pushing past. But in this case, the thrust comes from ejecting mass, not pushing against the environment. So if you imagine the Mentos and Coke idea again, when you push out backwards, when you've got that, you know, bit of exploding Coke coming out the back, this in a space environment would propel the Coke bottle forward.
Now, a final question for today from Kate. She asks, did the astronauts have champagne or whiskey up there to toast Earth from afar? That's what I'd take on my solar system camping adventures. What would you take, Jacinta?
Great question, Kate. Well, I actually wouldn't take anything with bubbles in it. And there's a good reason for that. I'll explain it in a second. So there has been alcohol in space in the past. In 1969, Buzz Aldrin took communion after he landed on the moon and he drank wine while he was up there. Although alcohol is no longer allowed, there have been some situations in the past where it has snuck on. But what I really think is interesting is the reason why you definitely wouldn't want champagne, for example, is you don't want carbonated liquids in space. And the astronauts actually don't have any carbonated liquids at all. The reason for that is because burping in space is very different to burping on Earth. So if you think about it, in space, the air, food, and liquids in your stomach are all floating together. Chris Hadfield, an astronaut, talks about how they floated together like chunky bubbles. And he actually, a quote here, which is so gross, if you burp, you throw up in your mouth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's called a wet burp. It's not a good time. Yeah.
So jeez.
They try and limit that as much as possible because obviously it's somewhere between a burp and a vomit.
Great. Okay, well, look, if you've got any questions for us about the Artemis mission or wet burps in space, there's still time for us to answer them. Email sciencefriction@abc.net.au.
Final thing is, that's not the final thing, a couple more things.
This episode was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people and produced by Shelby Traynor. I'm Belinda Smith.
I'm Jacinta Bowler. And from under this blanket, I'm signing off.